Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Duke's first, second, third down running back. He's played on special teams. Good in the running game. Good in the passing game. Good professional. Really excited to have him on board and just really look forward to working with him.
All right, so that's Bill O'Brien after today's practice. Duke Johnson did not practice today. So maybe
he looked good.
Yeah,
walking around.
I mean, he's
pretty stocky.
Yeah. So Duke Johnson, the most carries he's ever had in his NFL career, 104. Past that, it was, 73, 82, and 40 last year. He's never gone over 400 rushing yards, but he has amassed 2,000 receiving yards.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to provide something to this team.
He's something, and he's one of those guys that people always think, wow, why is he not getting more carries?
Yes.
And you always have to remember that the coach, even Hugh Jackson, even a coach like Hugh Jackson knows more about his guys than we do on the outside. And you always have to be really careful in thinking, hey, we're going to take this guy and all we have to do is run him four times as often and he'll be just as good. I don't think the Texans are doing that. I don't think they're looking at him as, hey, after Lamar Miller's gone, Duke Johnson's our feature back. I think they're looking at exactly what he is, which is a guy that is a really, really good receiver out of the backfield. And also a guy that can line up as a slot receiver, like, with credibility. You can line him up there at slot receiver, and defenses are in a bind because you feel like he's the kind of guy that you should cover with a defensive back, but I don't want to commit a defensive back to a running back. So it gives the offensive coordinator a lot of versatility and a lot of different options. So that's how the Texans are going to look at him, I think.
You know what I'm looking for? You know how the Patriots find a guy every year, like Deion Lewis a couple of years
right.
ago? But they find a guy every year, and you never saw it coming, and they use him in creative ways. Like, do the Texans ever do that?
They try.
Can they do that with Duke Johnson?
Let's see. Who have they done that with that became like a jackknife that you didn't expect? We've had a couple different guys that all of a sudden look good on jet sweeps for a little while, and then teams realize, like, oh,
yeah,
all
but
they,
who cares
all
about
they,
a jet
no,
sweep?
No, I know. All
know?
They can do is a jet sweep, and then that's how Braxton Miller was for a little bit. Like, wow, those are three glorious jet sweeps, and then we never saw him again. So the thing is that it's not going to be out of nowhere with Duke Johnson. Like you paid for him. You're paying him almost $4 million a year for that specifically.
Yeah.
That's where I wish they didn't have to. I wish this is like a Demaria Crockett or something that one of these guys turned into. You've got cap space. You've got this need. You've got somebody you can trust now in Duke Johnson that you know can get it done.
Right.
Then just go ahead and do it. And that's where I am with it.
Is it a sign that they want to take some off of Lamar Miller's plate? Lamar Miller is another guy that you look at and you're like, I don't know if he should be.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know if he should be the hog for a team.
No, and I don't think, because nobody, like very few teams look at their guy like they should be the hog anymore.
Yeah.
Like you want to be able to share
that. How many
that
guys in the league? Like
spread
four?
It out. Yeah. And then if they're injured, if they're injured, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Look at the Rams right now.
That's a big problem for the Rams.
So you got, even if you find that guy and then you pay him, you're up a creek if it's not working out for you. So, no, I think Lamar Miller and Duke Johnson probably look at a guy like Darren Sproles, who's 35 years old and still playing football, and think, you know what? It's not bad being on a committee. Like a committee of two isn't bad at all because you're still going to get your touches. You're still going to get your bonuses. You're still going to get some attention. But in the modern NFL, I think you let go of the notion of being a bell cow.
It still doesn't fix your goal line problems, by the way, because I don't think anybody thinks Duke Johnson's going to be a goal line.
No, and I think the problem with the goal line has been largely on the offensive line more than anything else. I think that it's not that they haven't, I don't think, it's not that Lamar Miller is incapable of running in short yardage. If you think about last year, at the end of the year when they weren't running the ball well, it wasn't an Alfred Blue or Lamar Miller or Deontay Foreman issue as bad as their numbers were. It was an offensive line issue, and they just flat out couldn't get movement on people. So the red zone issues will only get rectified if they figure out the offensive line. And that's the where the rubber meets the road, where right now I can feel good about a lot of the skill position players. Once you get down into that extreme red zone, especially inside of 10 yards, it's hard to get much accomplished if you can't move the pile. Because you just don't open things up for your receivers if there's not that threat of the run.
They did not look good in the red zone at the goal line. Their offensive
They weren't steamrolling people or anything. Those guys got in basically with guile.
Okay, Seth, let me ask this question. So you go out and you overspend, on Duke Johnson. Like, why not make this the year that you're going to make a legitimate Super Bowl run? Like, just go give what it takes to get Trent Williams. And I know it is sacrilegious to give up a first-round pick. I get it. But why not just go make this? Like, because at some point, you have to establish, okay, we're going to be Super Bowl contenders. Mm-hmm. They're not Super Bowl contenders until they fix the offensive line. I'm sorry.
Well, this is where I'd given Brian Gain 2 years to fix the offensive line. So, obviously, after 2 years, it depends. It depends on what your two rookies can do. If those guys can come along, and then if one of your offensive tackles, Chantrell Henderson, maybe can stay healthy, then maybe you fixed it to a certain degree. But
I don't want to deal with maybes anymore.
Right,
I'm
but
sick
I think
of it.
They have to look. The Redskins aren't going to trade Trent Williams likely until it gets closer to actual regular season.
They're gonna.
It's in their best interest to try to work this thing out.
Yeah.
Whatever Trent Williams' disgruntlement is, it's in their best interest to go in with a rookie quarterback and have Trent Williams there. So maybe they're going to hold on as long as they can. That gives the Texans like 3 more weeks to feel, what do they have with Tytus Howard? What do they have with Max Sharping? I like what I saw out of Zach Fulton. Fulton had some issues last year, but he also had some injury issues. And maybe feel like we at least have an improved offensive line over last year. They're a more athletic offensive line than they were last year. That doesn't mean they're going to be a good offensive line. Can they be better than last year? I think already just athletically they are. Does that mean that all of a sudden you're going to be bulldozing people on the goal line? Not necessarily. So they've got just 2 weeks really to figure that out.
Man, but I get it. What you said about the Redskins actually makes a lot of sense. Why would they ever want to give Trent Williams up? But here's the thing. Trent Williams told them, and the second report came out yesterday, he's not going to play for them. He doesn't trust their training staff, which, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier. You told me that's a big deal for players.
Yeah, it is. No, especially if you feel like your life was threatened because of it.
Because he had the tumor.
Right.
So it's like, if I'm a Texans fan, I'm sick of going into the season with so many question marks. Because think about, we're going to get to week one here pretty soon. The Saints, what question marks do the Saints still have to answer? They have a great offensive line. They have a great quarterback. They got their running backs, their wide receivers. Their defense is young and good. Like, they don't have any question marks. The Saints don't. If I'm a Texans fan, I'd be so sick of going into the regular season hoping that everything goes right so that we can win. Just answer the questions before you get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we do that for once?
So, but you're advocating giving up a first rounder for Trent Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, and I get it. It is, you're overpaying, but don't you overpay for some things in life, Seth? You know?
Yeah, of course you do. Okay, if they don't trade for Trent Williams, is all hope lost? Are you hanging all your hope on Trent Williams?
No, all of the hope isn't lost, but your Super Bowl aspirations are out the window. Because look at who gets to the Super Bowl over the last 3 years. Teams with good offensive lines. The Rams had a great offensive line. Obviously, the Patriots had a good offensive line last year. The year before that, the Eagles had a great offensive line to the point where Nick Foles was so comfortable that he got him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. No, look, I'm all for it, man. Like, just go for it.
Now you're
get
just
going to
concede this argument.
Well,
to me.
No, I don't like. What am I going to do? Demand that they get Trent Williams? I don't want Bill.
Yes.
Bill O'Brien just overpaid to get Duke Johnson, and I'm okay with that. Is he going to overpay to get Trent Williams? And then is this going to be the MO for the Texans at this point to just start overpaying for everybody to correct the mistakes?
It doesn't have to be their MO, but it could be the MO for this year. Like, finally, this could be the year they're going for it.
You're getting desperate and itchy and finicky because you want Trent Williams, so you're willing to give up a first round. I don't think you're going to need to give up a first rounder to give up Trent, to get Trent Williams. If Trent Williams genuinely doesn't want to play for the Redskins, he will be available for a second round pick. And I'd gladly give up a second and maybe a fourth too as well. For whatever reason, you're going to have to pry that first round pick out of my cold, dead hands. The one big thing, Trent Williams with injury concerns over the past couple seasons. He missed 4 games 3 years ago, but that was for a PED suspension.
Played 13 last year.
Which apparently we don't care anything about anymore.
Nope.
Yeah, I like when a 30-year-old is missed. So let's say theoretically he would have played 16 games in the year that he missed his PED suspension. It's not like he's all of a sudden like ridiculously injury prone or anything like that. But he's old. So I don't want to give up a first rounder for an old. I'll give up a second rounder and maybe a little bit
okay.
more.
All I'm saying though is
if he goes for a first round pick, I will come on your night show and admit that I was wrong.
No, I wouldn't even think that would make you wrong. I would legitimately think they overspent and I'm glad they did.
You're fine that they overspent.
Right.
Yeah. I just don't want them to get in the habit of overspending.
I don't either, but I don't want them to get into the habit of not providing the support Deshaun Watson needs as a young guy.
Look, I sat here and watched the Astros maddeningly be patient and not overpay and overspend for things for a long time. And now they're sitting on like having to pay all these awesome guys and they're gonna have to actually let good players go. That you've got to be financially conservative, at least a little bit with some things. And I get really finicky about my first round picks. I don't want to give them up for a 30-plus-year-old.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
No,
and especially when you don't need to.
I think you're in the majority of this. I think most people would not want to give up a first round pick, especially NFL first round picks, because of what they can be and how cheap they can be.
This is the problem, is that you just don't know what to trust with Tytus Howard. Tytus Howard in his first preseason game versus backups. Versus the Green Bay Packers defense was all backups, but for one guy, he didn't look awful, but he didn't look like he was ready to start in the NFL.
Do you think that's maybe a first time thing?
That's where I don't freak out and jump off of buildings off of first time performances. It's hard. That first preseason game is a there's a lot going through.
I would imagine
your brain.
It's a million miles per hour.
Yeah, and it's guys make a huge leap from week one to week two a lot of the time.
Okay, so how about this? What are the traits that you look for in a guy that could potentially be your left tackle? And did Tytus Howard show those?
He didn't necessarily show that. Now, left tackle, I'm interested. I got to go back and watch a little bit more closely because I didn't see as much to judge from his work at left tackle. As I know Clinton had a couple of comments. I was more based on what I saw of him at guard.
Okay.
And
well, either way. Because
what he had a hard time doing as a guard was when he was working in combination with the tackle where Tytus Howard is supposed to give the defensive tackle a shot and then work up to a linebacker. Tytus whiffed a few times on linebackers to where the linebacker went completely unblocked and that guy made the play. Some of that is just timing and anticipation and learning to figure it out. So when he watches that on film and he sees what he did wrong, can he correct that and be better in week two? So like that specifically is what I'm going to be watching from him from week one to week two.
You know what sucks? Like I can't make my own opinions about it. Anytime these offensive linemen come up, I just can't, like my eyes don't see what a former NFL player sees when I feel like I can watch a cornerback and I know what to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But,
well, part of it is, the pain in the butt of it is that it's you don't actually get to watch the football game when you're doing it. Like you take your eye away from the ball a lot. Yeah. So like watching defensive line play and offensive line play, it's laborious. Like it takes a long time. But that's also why this is what always drives me crazy. With defensive linemen, when somebody all of a sudden takes on a huge reputation as a defensive lineman, then a person will say, oh, I'm going to watch J.J. Watt this game. And then they're like shocked that J.J.'s not making a tackle every single play. And they always come away saying like, well, I wasn't that impressed. I don't know. I wasn't that impressed. Like I watched Von Miller the entire game. And you know, like, frankly, there's a lot of plays where he's not making plays. Like, yeah, it's really hard to get it. If you get a sack one out of 60 times, you're the best pass rusher in the league. That's how hard it is to make plays. Yeah.
Those are the numbers. All right. Coming up next. So Bill O'Brien did make the trade for Duke Johnson. We have that report. He's the guy that made the trade. So we were all wondering about it. Did he give up too much? Did he act impulsively making this move? We'll dissect the evidence. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Sports Radio 610. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki in on a Saturday afternoon. Talking about the Texans training camp special. So I did think it was enlightening the Duke Johnson trade because everybody was wondering who's going to make the phone call. Now, John McClain did report a couple of weeks ago it's going to be Bill O'Brien, but we have confirmation now. It's been reported Bill O'Brien's the one that was negotiating the Duke Johnson trade with John Dorsey. So, Seth, when I looked at all the evidence surrounding the Duke Johnson thing, here's what I get. There's two big things. First of all, they released Deontay Foreman 4 days before this trade went down. So there was like a handshake agreement, and Bill O'Brien thought that he could make this trade, but it wasn't done. And he made the trade he released Deontay Foreman 4 days before the trade went down. So that was the first part where I'm like, that seems kind of impulsive to me.
It does. It's impulsive unless like he had a rock solid assurance that they were going to do the trade for Duke Johnson and that the price wasn't going to change, I guess.
But still,
it almost feels reckless there because, yeah, you just don't know.
But like, it seems, and the reason I can spot it because I got it, because that's what I would do.
Uh-huh.
I would make an impulsive decision like that. Like I would go, if I knew I was getting paid on Friday, I'd go spend the last $200 I have on you know, some stupid thing.
Because
you
were getting paid.
Because I knew I was getting paid.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend would step in and say, you're an idiot, man. And now, I don't know. We're probably never going to know what the real backstory is to this. But from the outside looking in, it looks like Bill O'Brien acted impulsively. And it looks like he could have used somebody to say, hey, let's slow down a little bit and let's just wait on it. Because they didn't need to release Deontay Foreman to make
this
trade.
Right, unless Deontay Foreman was just so ridiculously out of control or something.
But he wasn't. He wasn't Antonio Brown.
He was having meetings for like socialism in the... He was trying to recruit communists in the break room.
Right.
Yeah, he was... it was just... He was fed up with him and he was tired of him, so it was time for him to go.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It sounds like a coach that's... I just can't wait to get this guy off my squad.
And you know, you wonder if John Dorsey... the GM for the Browns is sitting there when that happens. Is that how the pick becomes conditional? Is that how?
Wow.
Does Dorsey think, oh, okay, Billy, listen, look, you know, he's actually been, Duke's actually been shown a lot of recovery with his hamstring and he's been around the office and it seems like he might actually be okay with playing with us.
Yeah, because
why don't we sweeten the pot a little bit?
Just because they
Deontay
agreed
Foreman's
to
gone.
It doesn't, like, honestly, like, that's actually a really good point. They could. There's probably so many GMs around the NFL that talk to each other, come to an almost agreement, and then back out right at the last second.
Mm.
And we just never hear about it because they backed out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a really that could have happened.
Well, and it right, and you just don't know. Other than that, McClain wrote in his article that he knew that the deal that O'Brien knew the deal could be consummated.
But that's not
but
enough
that's,
for
that's
me.
That's different than actually just pulling the deal. And that's the question is, like, what's the harm in having Deontay Foreman on the
that's
team
what
for
I'm
a little
wondering.
Bit? I guess unless you're worried that if Deontay Foreman gets injured, you know, once you've made the decision on him, if he gets injured and all of a sudden is on IR, then all of a sudden you're paying the guy for another year for somebody you didn't want on the team. But you don't have to play him in any games. You know,
right.
you don't have to give him those reps if you don't want to. And then also, you look at the fact that he was picked up off of waivers by the Colts. It's obvious that the Colts saw value in Deontay Foreman. If Deontay Foreman gets in the preseason game and gets, say, Demaria Crockett or Tywan Jones reps, those guys looked actually pretty good. Like, they were running the ball pretty well. I'd imagine Deontay Foreman would have looked pretty good. And then all of a sudden you're talking about potentially, like, having somebody trade for Deontay Foreman. And you can be honest with people. You're like, listen, he's gone all the time. Like, he's late all the time. I'm sick of it. But obviously he's a good player, and somebody throws you a seventh rounder for him.
Right.
Like, there's no need or urgency to get rid of him right that moment. When the Colts were ready to pick him up, at the very least, if you trade him for nothing, trade him for a 2021 seventh round pick, you can control him not going to the Colts, at least.
That's a good point. But that's a really good... The point is, there are personalities that are planning personalities, responsible personalities. Like, my girlfriend is that to me. I am impulsive. I want to buy it now. I don't want to wait for Amazon to give it to me $50 cheaper 3 days later. And I need my girlfriend to control the finances. Otherwise, I'd be broke, to be honest.
Sorry, like, I don't even need, like, a GM in my own life. How much
would what does your
cost?
Wife do
Brandon,
for you?
Can you look that up on the internet for me? Find out, like, a personal GM. Now, my wife's just like me. We're both the same. We're not. We don't like to plan ahead. We do just fine with the checkbook and everything, but as far as other stuff, like really like making long-term plans or strategic plans, I need a GM in my life. We need a GM for both my wife, and myself.
Yeah, get that booked up, Brandon.
Yeah, what I need is somebody that used to be a business executive, retired, and now they're bored. There's probably somebody listening right now, like on the way home from golf. If you've ever been the CEO of a company and you're bored, reach out to me on Twitter at Seth C. Payne. And
how old are your kids?
We'll do some kind of profit sharing thing.
How old are your kids?
My daughter's 14.
Oh, you just have a daughter?
Yeah.
Okay, well, a 14-year-old daughter sounds reasonable.
Yeah, well, she's not going to plan. She's not going to be my GM.
Well, I'm just saying.
She's not like Brian Cashman or something.
Does the GM want to hang around if you got like a bunch of little kids running around?
Oh,
right?
Okay. Well, no. This isn't like a family, like a nanny or anything. This is to help me out with my career. This is to help me make Sometimes I've signed contracts in this business before where I'm just like,
exactly.
I don't have the energy. Whatever.
Exactly.
Fine.
I did the same thing.
I need somebody to not do that.
Literally, I'm not going to read through a whole contract. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it. I will look at the dollar amount.
Yeah. You need it. Well, an agent is your GM in that situation.
Yeah. I'm not the night guy. But anyway, the point is, so Bill O'Brien spent a fourth round pick, which is probably going to become a third because if Duke Johnson's active for 10 games, then it becomes a third. So the Texans overpaid based on what most people are saying about the value of Duke Johnson, and they probably released Deontay Foreman with no good reason other than the fact that he was kind of a pain in the ass to the culture Bill O'Brien's trying to build. Does Bill O'Brien need that guy or the girl, whatever, to come in? Does he need that right-hand man? And I don't think he... So Jack Easterby is, according to McClain, his right-hand man.
Right, on the football side of things.
Right.
I think that... my personal gut feeling is that Jack Easterby, if Nick Caserio doesn't work out for whatever reason, that Jack Easterby would end up being the general manager.
I don't want that.
Yeah.
I don't want that because
That's a good... It's good for you not to want that because it would make sense because most GMs are actual personnel people. Like guys that actually came up through the ranks on the personnel side of things, and Jack Easterby is not that. So it would be a very much against the grain deal if they did that. And then again, nobody's told me that or anything. It just said everything's falling in line given how unconventionally they've done things. It's either going to be Nick Caserio or Jack Easterby.
I can't imagine, even if they gave Jack Easterby the role of GM, I can't imagine anybody's making personnel decisions outside of Bill O'Brien. Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine because...
Not there right this moment. Oh, you're saying in general?
Going forward.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know,
I think he's got it where he wants it.
But there is collaboration. Like, I think people get caught up in this idea of, like, who's got final say. There are plenty of coach GM situations in the league where it's a genuine collaboration, you know? And guys will hash it out and they'll argue and they'll butt heads and everything. Yeah. But it's actually more loosely defined, and I think in Baltimore it's kind of like this. It's more loosely defined than people would think that it's so. So with Caserio, I think it would be more collaboration between Bill O'Brien and Nick Caserio. The key thing is that Caserio would definitely be a guy that could say, "Bill,
yes,
don't do this.
Yes.
Don't do this right now.
So that's
don't
what I
cut
want.
Ryan Mallett right now. Don't make the impulsive decision." Right, and
because,
I don't know
because right now everybody in the front office seems to be under Bill O'Brien.
They'd have to be.
Like, I want somebody that's equal to him.
They've seen Bill O'Brien get two GMs fired. You know, like of course, you've got to be scared of Bill O'Brien.
Yeah,
even if on the flat organizational chart he's on your same level, Bill O'Brien's up above everybody.
That's
else.
What I think. Yeah. And I would make the argument based on what we've seen, based on the evidence, that he needs somebody that's more level, that's more equal. That can tell him, don't do this.
One of our listeners makes a good point. He says, I think they were trying to trade Deontay Foreman earlier in camp, which is why B.O.B. was talking him up so much, but didn't get any takers.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
They put him on the podium as if he was a starter.
Yeah, well, part of that, too, is I think there were a lot of requests for him. Because he did, it's really frustrating with Deontay Foreman, because he genuinely, during OTAs, looked like a different player. Like, he was as trim and fit as he'd ever been. Like, it looked like he had really turned a corner in terms of taking it seriously. That's why it was such a shock to find out that, like, oh, I guess he had turned a corner in some respects, but he still didn't like showing up on time. Huh. The guys that, I feel bad, some of these guys that just can't show up on time, you almost wonder, like, if it's a physiological issue, like they've got sleep apnea or something. Because I knew a guy, I played with a guy, Not Danny Arnold. Oh, I'm blanking on his name right now. I wish I wasn't. But he played for the Texans. But his rookie year, he was in Jacksonville, and I was in Jacksonville too when he was in when he was there. And he had sleep apnea, but nobody knew it. He was late all day. He was falling asleep in meetings all the time. His coach was an old Naval Academy guy that was just flip out on him all the time. And they found out he had sleep apnea, and he ended up, he got the sleep apnea fixed, and he was a different guy. Ended up playing in the Super Bowl with the Giants, and it was an amazing thing. So maybe Deontay Foreman just has the sleep apnea. Go get checked out, for the love of God.
Okay. All right. Maybe the Colts will fix that.
Ah, damn it. They probably will.
All right, coming up next, it was sloppy. The preseason game one for the Texans was sloppy in most respects, including on the offensive line. Could that be a positive thing? I'll explain myself after the break. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Sports Radio 610. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki in for the Texans training camp special. So Justin Reed came out on Twitter. He said, so there's a headline by the Texans Wire. Quote, Tyrann Mathieu is more finesse safety. And they said that was according to Justin Reed. Justin Reed's pissed off about it. he's saying, y'all making this up with, y'all making up this clickbait. The author of this won't be at my press conferences anymore.
I'll stick up for the writer a little bit, just in that the writer doesn't usually write the headlines. I read the article, and the article seemed pretty fair and balanced, and it very much shows that Justin Reed was giving a lot of really nice quotes about Tyrann Mathieu. He said, Mathieu is more finesse. Me and Gip, talking about Deshaun Gibson, are more similar body types. We're both bigger guys. We both stack up well against tight ends. Tyrann also had the ability to play the nickel, so we used to send him on a lot of blitzes, Reed explained. So, Justin Reed was saying really nice things about him. That ends up being, though, like that quote being used, and it wasn't even a quote, but saying Tyrann Mathieu is more of finesse safety, that ends up standing on its own looking like Justin Reed is taking shots at Tyrann Mathieu.
I was
you were there when he was
there,
talking about
it? Yeah, I was there when he was talking. He actually, you could see Justin Reed's very well-spoken.
Oh, no, there's no way Justin Reed would ever, slip up and talk smack about it.
No way.
Yeah.
He was very complimentary. He actually took a second to think about it and then made sure that he was careful, because all these players know. I feel bad for some of these players sometimes, because you know there are, it's not all media members, but some are just hawking around waiting for that headline.
No, that's why, I'm never critical of guys for giving boring quotes, because as a player,
I know.
When you're talking, you are constantly monitoring what you're saying, thinking all right, how do I phrase this in a way that can't be taken out of context? And how do I phrase it in a way that it's clear that I'm not actually making a backhanded compliment?
It sucks.
Or anything.
I hate it, because there was all or nothing.
Yeah.
There's moments in there where you see Cam Newton talking to Josh, the cornerback for the Redskins, Josh Norman.
Yeah.
And they're talking on the phone, and it's so authentic, and they're both swearing, and they're talking like normal people. And I'm thinking to myself, I haven't seen this from an athlete in years, I feel like. And Cam Newton goes up there, and every time Cam Newton's in a press conference, it sounds like he's forcing out, nice speak or whatever. You know, he's talking, he's trying to talk all proper.
Because look what happens when he tried to he spoke casually to the woman in the press conference once, and it turned into him losing sponsors and everything.
It sucks. I feel like, aren't we at a place right now where you have websites like Barstool Sports and all that stuff? Aren't we at a place where we're past the wanting athletes to be superheroes, or we know what these athletes are.
Right. But the problem is, though, that you you stir this drama up. This doesn't make Justin Reed look like he's a criminal or anything, but it's something that's embarrassing. It's inaccurate. It makes Justin Reed look being a D-bag when he was being the exact opposite. Yeah. So it says Texans Justin Reed, : Tyrann Mathieu is more a finesse safety. That is, he said that, but in the context of saying like Tyrann Mathieu is awesome. This is how he's different than me and Deshaun Gibson. He's more finesse. We're more physical. But standing on its own like that, it ends up looking like he's taking a shot at Tyrann Mathieu.
It's the media's fault.
Yeah. So it's and it does suck when something like that is out there. I can't remember what it was with me. There was a quote. Oh, well, with me now. See, this is because this has been going on forever. I was in Houston. And we're going into our third season, I think. Somebody in Jacksonville, I was on a conference call with the Jacksonville media because we were playing Jacksonville that week. Somebody in Jacksonville asked, is there going to be more pressure to win this year because the franchise is, you know, in its third year? And I said, oh, naturally, you know, there's always going to be a lot more pressure every single year. Like, I gave a very, very benign quote. I wanted to check to see how the story was written the next day, so I went to the Jacksonville paper the next day. Paper says, Payne says Dom Capers' job is on the line. I'm like, what the hell? Like, yeah. And then their article is written. Their article says, Seth Payne says Dom Capers might be out of a job if they don't start winning more games this year. And, like, my mind is blown. I never even mentioned Dom Capers in this interview. And then they used the quote after it that said, there's always more pressure each and, you know, with each successive year. So I went immediately up to Dom, and I'm like, Dom, you got to understand, I did not even talk about you yesterday. The guy who had written the article was known as, like, a pretty shady dude. Like, he ended up getting fired for basically fabricating quotes and stuff. But it's like, it's the worst feeling because it puts you out there against people. It's saying that you're talking smack about people you care and respect about. It's awful.
You know, there's guys that now go into interviews with their own recorders. I think Aaron Rodgers does that, doesn't he?
I think
Aaron Rodgers records his own interviews.
Just to prove if something was taken out of context.
It is such a weird relationship. Like, we, like the reporters, we're not reporters, but reporters that are covering beats every day,
yeah,
they go up to the athletes, and you're an ex-athlete, so you can attest to this. Like, they go up, and it's not just because they want to talk. It's because they're trying to get something from the athlete. So as an athlete, I'm sure it feels weak, like it just kind of feels dirty, you know? Because you know, all you're doing is giving a quote so they can have information.
But that's where you get a trust level after a while. Like, when you get to, like, if a guy talks to John McClain every day, he knows that John's not going to take his words out of context or something. So, like, this writer, this Mark Lane, this guy listened to a quote by Justin Reed. If he ever goes to try to talk to Justin Reed individually, like, Justin Reed's going to know this guy. Like, yeah. I cannot trust you. Like, you cannot be trusted. That's what happened with that one guy, that one writer that I was talking about, was players just started to refuse to talk to him. He'd have to, like, sneak up while somebody else was talking and put his microphone up.
That's a terrible place to be.
He couldn't get interviews with him. And he actually ended up going on to get, like, a pretty high job because he wrote good articles with made-up quotes.
Well, yeah, I guess,
before he was found out eventually.
That's the other weird part of it. Like, the media is, like, we are reliant on the sports, but our job isn't really to serve the sports play. Our job is not to make sure they're comfortable. Our job in the end is to get ratings or clicks.
Right. Well, but you're supposed to do it ethically. you're supposed to do it with some semblance of the truth. That's the thing it's driven me crazy forever just with newspapers, is that there seems to be less of a standard. Like, newspapers still hold themselves to very high standards in terms of sourcing and everything, and they'll get it wrong and they make mistakes, and they're like, but usually when a newspaper messes it up, it's because a source misled somebody or, like, something, like, it was a genuine mistake. But then when it comes to headline writing, it's like the Wild West. Like, it's almost like, oh, all bets are off when we tweet it out or write the headline. We'll do something that has nothing to do with the context of the story.
Well, every business has that dirty part of it.
Yeah.
The NFL's got dirty parts of it, you know, that the NFL would like to hide. But I think that is legitimate. I think it's a necessary evil for newspapers especially. They're dying at they're dying all over the place. The headline, that's the thing that drives the clicks. And that's what writers will tell you. I don't write the headline.
Yeah.
I don't write the headline. It's the dirty part of the business.
So now this writer's got to go talk to Justin Reed about the headline writer and be like, hey, because you read the article and the article itself is pretty fair. I don't think Justin Reed's getting screwed in the article. It's just that headline/tweet.
Well, yeah, I don't know if Justin Reed, is somebody going to tell Justin Reed, hey, these guys don't write the headlines?
Yeah, the PR guys probably.
Or
will.
Did he? I mean, you don't know.
Yeah.
Not with a USA Today thing.
What happens with this, though, too, is that then what'll happen is the Amy, like, somebody from the Texans will go talk to the writer about, like, hey, what the hell are you doing with this? And then they'll usually come to an understanding.
So, I mean, that's unfortunate. Now, Justin, by the way, Justin Reed is, like, super well-spoken. Justin Reed is a classic Texan. All this, like, we talked about Bill O'Brien likes those Texan guys. Justin Reed is that guy. He's a great safety. They think that Justin Reed's going to be the cornerstone for that safety position.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about areas that I feel good about with the Texans right now, the safety position I feel pretty good about. And Adai has actually come up and made some plays too. So with Tashawn Gibson and Justin Reed and Adai and some of the other guys back there. I feel good about that, which is nice because, look, Jonathan Joseph is at that stage in his career where he's not going to blanket people like in tight man coverage and press coverage all the time. He needs good safeties playing behind him to really get the most out of Jonathan Joseph.
How much can that help? Because they're going to have a great defensive line, you would think. That's going to be one of the strengths
of
the team.
Well, they've got a good defensive line for stopping the run. They don't have a great defensive line for pass rushing.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, it's JJ and it's Merciless, you know, and hopefully...
What about Clowney?
Clowney. I meant Clowney.
Okay.
Hopefully Merciless started off last year not as healthy, like he was overcoming a pec injury, and then they used him in a bunch of different ways. I think they're going to continue to use him in a bunch of different ways because he's more valuable in that respect. But there were times last year where when an offensive line was able to take care of Watt and Clowney, there wasn't a whole lot else going on. And the composition of that defensive line is they've got a lot of big, hulking, run-stopping dudes, plus Watt and Clowney. One thing I'd like to see happen this year, and I don't know if they'll do it or not, but JJ's been rushing mostly from the outside, I think mostly to keep him healthy. If he could move down inside and let Merciless and Clowney rush on the edges, but you have JJ as that interior presence, that can make a big difference. And you don't have to do it a bunch, just on some third down.
So what's the advantage of that? Just getting him on a mismatch or what?
Having him on the edge? JJ?
No, yeah, slide it because you want to slide JJ inside.
Slide him
right?
inside because he's still a really effective interior pass rusher. I think they've just wanted to be careful about getting him too much. So because if you do that, then you have your edge rushers being Merciless and Clowney. Right now, you've got JJ Watt rushing at left end, and that leaves only Merciless or Clowney to be your edge rusher on the other side, and then maybe one of the other one, and then the other one maybe goes and does that standing up inside linebacker type thing. I think it'd be really effective to have both Merciless and Clowney on the outside with JJ on the inside at times. It's just that you also have to keep JJ healthy. You know, I don't want to do it at the expense of JJ's health, but just a few times a game on like extreme third and long situations, I think it might be a good idea.
All right, let's go to the offensive line. I want to get back to this preseason game. Seth Payne, Matthew Jarecki, Texans training camp special. We're with you for about the next 10 minutes. So it was sloppy. I mean, we have a soundbite from you and Clint Sterner talking. You didn't think Matt Khalil was very good.
I wasn't impressed with him. And he had a couple really rough snaps. The snap where he got called for holding, the guy could have beat him extremely clean. Khalil had good hands on him, and for whatever reason, you know, Wade Smith pointed this out, didn't bring his feet, and that's where I start to worry. Does Matt Khalil have it with his feet anymore? You know, he's had so many injuries. Does he just have the athleticism anymore? There was another time where he was bull rushed pretty thoroughly and aggressively, and he looked really light in the butt. Those things made me nervous, especially because he was going against backups. You know, he wasn't going against Von Miller out there.
Yeah. And Clint Sterner said when Titus Howard moved to the left tackle position, he wasn't impressed with what he saw.
Yeah.
You know, and
I'm not as worried about Titus Howard because he's a rookie.
Right.
And like that first game, especially on into the first few games, we saw it with Dwayne Brown his rookie year. Dwayne Brown came along very slowly and, you know, eventually turned into an all-pro caliber offensive tackle. So I'm concerned about it in the short term because I think that it doesn't look like Titus Howard's going to be ready to play left tackle versus the Saints. Khalil can get it done. It's just a matter of I don't know if O'Brien was hoping for this or Brian Gain was. I don't know what kind of form they expected him to return to, but he hasn't been a good offensive tackle in a long, long time, and I don't think I'm going to see him return to that form this year.
But here's my question. Where's the line between waiting for Titus Howard to sprout into what you want him to and saying, okay, the offensive line's not going to be what we expected. We got to go make a move here.
I think the line between it is, okay, who are the other guys on the defensive line, on the offensive line that we might feel okay with playing at left tackle?
You had mentioned a guy.
Well, Roderick Johnson, honestly, I would have never mentioned him before other than that he played a bunch, and I thought he looked pretty good and pretty solid. He might have been the most solid offensive lineman out there in that preseason game versus a bunch of backups. But if they feel that they can get away with one of these other guys, maybe they'll do that, and maybe that keeps them from throwing a big old wad of draft picks at Trent Williams. But that's where you are. I mean,
how much better does the offensive line need to be? Because Deshaun Watson, isn't Tom Brady. He can move around. He doesn't need the world's best offensive line. So how much better do they need to be? They obviously can't give up 62 sacks.
Right, they can't give up 62 sacks. They need to be markedly better than they were last year. Last year, at times, they just didn't have any athleticism out there. You know, when there was Julion Davenport and Martinez Rankin and Senio Calamente and Zach Fulton at times, and Fulton was banged up and injured last year. They weren't athletic enough. At the very least, now they look more athletic. Like, they look like they can be a more competitive offensive line. Even if Khalil isn't like a good offensive tackle, he can at least be a competitive offensive tackle. If you use that in conjunction with Deshaun Watson and his threat as a runner, that can go a long way. Like Cam Newton makes his offensive line look way better than they actually are. And it's because Cam Newton is part of the running game, like part of the designed running game. It means that defenders have to defend one extra gap because they're always worried about Cam
Newton
as a runner.
Yeah.
So Deshaun Watson, it doesn't mean he actually has to run the ball 10 times a game, but he has to be a running threat 10 times a game at least. And then all of a sudden your offensive line can look a lot better.
Can I ask you this question? I've been meaning to ask. So they want, every indication is they want Deshaun Watson to get the ball out quicker this year. Okay. But here's been my question about that. Like, Big Ben's never going to get the ball out quickly.
Yeah.
You know, he plays that style. Part of what makes him successful is him running around and making those plays. Is that just part of Deshaun Watson's DNA? Like, I get it. Like, I get what they want him to do, and they think it'll prevent him from being injured and all that.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes don't you have to build around what a guy is?
I think that, for one, because Big Ben can get away with it because he weighs 270 pounds. Plus, he's injured all the time, though, too. You know, so it's like, I don't think it's not so great that he does it all the time. Like, he'd probably be better served if he could stay healthy for an entire season. I think that with Russell Wilson, part of that's just because he's short, and that when he runs out of options in terms of his progressions, he's got to scramble outside to see what his options are. So, like, if he could get rid of the ball faster at times, I think it would be better. I think with Deshaun, you look at, like, his yards per attempt and how high it is. Like, you could say that's a good thing. Hey, he pushes the ball downfield. It's also kind of an indicator they're not really attacking the field all over the way they could be. And I think that's where you want him to get rid of the ball quicker, not just to protect himself, but because you want to have that quick strike ability. You want to be able to inject some doubt and fear into defensive backs that they can't just sit back on their heels and play everything in front of them, that they're going to have to be aggressive and come up and play underneath stuff. And that opens up stuff downfield. Like, it makes him a better complete quarterback if he can do it.
You would think that this year with Will Fuller and Kiki QT being back, along with the addition of Duke Johnson, that he really locked on to DeAndre Hopkins last year. Who could blame him?
Right, and it was also because there just weren't a lot. There genuinely weren't a lot of guys open a lot of the time after the injuries took hold. And there were specifically weren't guys open early in the down. Like, QT is the only guy who is really adept at getting open really fast. Now, Fuller's great underneath, but as far as somebody that can get, like, open lightning quick across the middle, that's why you have those slot receivers. That's why they're so nice for a quarterback to have that option. If all of a sudden, oh, wow, there's a corner blitz that I didn't anticipate, I know where I can go with it. I got my hot route, but I also got Kiki open, and hopefully you get more of that.
And Kiki only played 3 games last year, so you would assume, like, maybe we're underrating how good Deshaun was last year, 25 points a game, 11-5.
Oh, yeah.
And now he has all his weapons back. By the way, we should mention A.J. McCarron out with a thumb injury, Kiki QT out with an ankle injury. Neither of them practiced today. Okay, Seth Payne, thanks so much.
Good job, man.
Yeah, that was fun.
You got a future at this. Good job. That was easy.
Matthew Jarecki.
I purposely came in with having done zero so I could put it all on the young guy, and you did a good job.
All right. It's Texans Training Camp Special, Sports Radio 610.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.